Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, folks, Hurricane Harvey has now re-entered land, dumping 11 inches of rain over the last night on Port Arthur, on Beaumont. It is a massive problem. This follows, of course, Donald Trump yesterday traveling to Texas, promising more help for that state, plus Louisiana, where Hurricane Harvey is on its way. We'll have all of the latest, including information on hurricane relief efforts. Again, massive devastation there in my home state of Texas. Now headed to Louisiana on the Tom Jones Morning Show simulcast. We'll talk with Texas Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee about what is going on with the federal effort. Also, we'll talk this morning about the Attorney General of Illinois, Lisa Madigan, now suing the city of Chicago over police misconduct, and she wants a federal court to oversee reforms in that department. That is a huge, huge development. Also, folks, on the show today, it was on Monday, 3,000 faith leaders met at the Minister's March for Justice at the MLK Memorial here in the nation's capital. Our cameras were there. We gave you a little bit of that yesterday. We'll be more in depth on that today. Of course, Monday was the 54th anniversary of the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. Also, the 62nd anniversary of the lynching of Emmett Till. Also on the show, voting is still a major issue in this country. Federal courts rule against Texas again when it comes to the redrawing of two of the state's congressional districts. Plus, North Carolina is going through their own map issue. And Illinois, they also have, they changed the automatic voter registration in that state as well. We'll talk with Christian Clark, President, Executive Director of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. And the cast of Survivor's Remorse, they are back. Erica Ash, Jesse T. Usher. We'll talk with them. It's time to bring the funk. News One Now on TV One.
You cannot put 6.5 million people on the road 2 days before a storm that you don't know where it is going. It is absurd.
That, of course, is Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner blasting critics who said the city should have had a mandatory evacuation. Again, as someone who is from there, that is very difficult, especially when you look at what happened, of course, 12 years ago with Hurricane Rita, where a number of people, upwards of hundreds, died just trying to leave the city. Today, folks, more rain in Houston, 1 to 2 inches. But the problem today, and it's not Houston, the problem right now is what's happening east of Houston in the Golden Triangle, known as Port Arthur, Beaumont, and Lake Charles. Massive amounts of rain. There are shelters in Port Arthur that are also seeing floodwaters. They got overnight, in a six-hour period, 11 inches of rain. In fact, someone posted last night a photo of a highway where they literally had caps on the water that you swore you were looking at ocean. No, it was an actual freeway that we're seeing as well. All kinds of problems there in the Gulf Coast region. And again, east of Houston, where the rain has actually moved away from Houston, again, these storms are going towards Louisiana. Lake Charles, not lots of rain there, but Port Arthur, Beaumont, massive problems there. Folks are actually posting on social media, of course, reports of being rescued. One particular report had a woman saying that her grandmother had water up to her knees. She was in a wheelchair in her home. They've been putting the addresses out there as well. This is a major, major issue, folks. You heard there Mayor Sylvester Turner saying 6.5 million people. Now, when you go outside of the Houston zone, Beaumont is, of course, 90 minutes away. Now you're talking about even more people. This is how devastating this is. Also, folks, the death toll has risen. It's now up to 30 folks who have died, including a Houston police sergeant, Steve Perez. Investigators say he was last seen leaving for work on Sunday, but on Monday, crews found him inside his vehicle in a flooded underpass. His wife asked him not to go to work, but He said, I have to. Family members are remembering retired high school coach Reuben Jordan. He was last seen Saturday morning helping rescue people from high water. Now, there are various reports on the exact death toll. New York Times, they say 30 confirmed and suspected flood-related deaths. That number is going to certainly rise. The National Weather Service reports that 1 trillion gallons of rain fell in Harris County over the past 4 days. The report said more than 50 inches of rain fell in the town just outside of Houston, topping the previous high of 48 inches set in 1978. 6,000 people have been rescued, trapped in their homes. Estimated 17,000 are now staying in shelters. That number, again, is going to increase. Now, a pair of 70-year-old reservoirs that protect downtown Houston started overflowing. That's even after engineers began releasing water from them on Monday to ease pressure on those dams. There are now fears more neighborhoods along one of the city's main bayous will flood. Mayor Turner has issued a curfew from midnight to 5 a.m. to crack down on looters and home burglaries. He also says the largest shelter, the George R. Brown Convention Center, is now at capacity. Now, next door, the Toyota Center, where the Houston Rockets play, will take the overflow from crowded shelters.
The services to meet the needs of people, the services are here. The George R. Brown is here. Their homes are here. The medical care here. The Red Cross is here. Pharmaceutical services are here. And I am the mayor of the city of Houston, and I can work to meet their needs.
And again, a lot of folks were saying that folks should be evacuated, but as the mayor is saying, the services are already there. As I said, the storm is moving east. There are already reports of flooding in New Orleans. Mayor Mitch Landrieu says the city is prepared for the weather and will still try to help Houstonians.
Houston begins to go through the great agony of what we went through, and we attempt to rebuild. It is our unified position that the nation should be ready to respond like they did for us, and we are absolutely certain they will do so. And, of course, we will be there to do our part.
Now, of course, yesterday, Donald Trump, he visited Corpus Christi, promising to help flood victims in Texas and Louisiana. Trump and his wife, Melania, arrived in Corpus Christi. The two sat down with Senators John Cornyn and Ted Cruz when they visited a center there in Austin. Also, Housing Secretary Dr. Ben Carson was there as well.
We're going to be working with Congress on helping out the state of Texas. It's going to be a costly proposition because, again, probably Ted Cruz is here. And Senator, thank you very much, Senator Cornyn. And we'll be working with these characters over here. And I think we'll come through with a really, you know, with the right solution.
Of course, many folks are concerned if Trump and a deeply divided Congress can work together to approve the billions of dollars in funding needed to help rebuild the Bayou City. Also yesterday, folks, and I'll pull it up in just a second, when Trump visited Corpus Christi, he thanked the large crowds for showing up. Many folks are criticizing him for showing virtually no empathy for the residents of Texas. You have not heard the traditional statements from a president thanking the first responders and also showing, again, empathy for those impacted. In fact, Trump yesterday in his visit did not visit any shelters at all, did not do anything when it came with residents there as well, people who are impacted. Let's talk about that. Greg Carr, chair of the Department of Afro-American Studies, Howard University. Eugene Craig III, CEO of the Eugene Craig Organization. Spencer Overton, president of the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies. It's interesting, Eugene, yesterday Ari Fleischer was on Fox, and he was talking about this lack of empathy by the president. He was saying that, look, in times of crisis, this is when people are expecting a president to show something, to rally a nation. Trump pretty much is focused on money and is focused on businesses and saying things are going great, you know, we'll rebuild, but you might want to show some compassion for the people being impacted.
Absolutely. You know, there was criticism about how President Bush executed the recovery of Katrina, but I don't think anybody could question if he had empathy for the people that are impacted by Katrina. When Sandy hit New Jersey and New York, you know, everybody saw and felt the empathy from, you know, President Obama, Michelle Obama. With Donald Trump going down yesterday, you know, one thing that he could have done to at least score some major points was show a large amount of empathy, a large amount of sympathy, a large amount of, hey, we know you're going through a living hell right now, and, you know, I'm here for you, I feel for you, and that, you know, we're going to put the full weight of the federal government behind you.
In fact, yeah, this is, Shelley, go to my iPad, please. This is Ari Fleischer yesterday on Fox News talking about that very issue.
What would your advice be to President Trump as he sets foot there in Texas today?
Well, that's right, Molly. I was with President Bush when he went to see the devastation caused by fires in Missouri and Arizona and tornadoes in Missouri. And there was something missing from what President Trump said. I hope he will say it later today. But that's the empathy for the people who suffer. That, in my opinion, should have been the first thing he should have said, was that his heart goes out to those people in Houston who are going through this, and that the government is here to help them to recover from this. And then secondly, the job of the president is to thank those who are the first responders doing all the rescuing. You know, that is a huge morale boost to those working so hard away from their families. Their homes are often flooded, but they're sacrificing themselves to save others, and the president needs to thank them. That's what a presidential visit can accomplish. I hope President Trump will return to that in some other public setting later today.
It is a tremendous...
Spencer.
So how much of this, though, is the Republicans' discomfort with the role of government in terms of Ted Cruz criticizing funding for Sandy back then? Now, hey, obviously they want some support. So how much of this is Republican discomfort with the role of government?
I think the party split on it. Chris Christie was on.
No, they're not.
Wait. The party is actually.
Nobody is split until they are impacted.
I'll put it this way. I'm far from a Christie defender. Chris Christie, another network yesterday, made it very clear that Republicans in Congress need to take serious action when it comes.
Again, let me say it again.
Eugene, let's be honest. If I'm advising the president, I think this is a damn good time to pivot towards infrastructure, particularly when it comes to Flint, Michigan, and Houston, Texas.
Eugene, there is not a single Republican in Congress that if their town was devastated, they would not be begging the federal government for help.
I agree.
This, Greg, is the hypocrisy of Republicans.
No question.
Where they criticize big government, yet when you have national catastrophes, that is when big government responds, and they all are there going,
that's right.
Can y'all please fill our hands?
That's right. I mean, this is a real tragedy. I mean, Roland, your family, my sister and brother-in-law had to get out. They're now in Austin. It's what we saw Mayor Turner do, that's compassion. He says he has some control. Chief Acevedo yesterday almost weeping openly over Brother Perez that lost his life. That's what it's. I don't really have a criticism of Donald Trump for this, because what we saw was Donald Trump. He's got a hat on his head. He's selling his website. His wife's in her storm stilettos, and she's got a hat on to remind everybody she's the floaters. It was Trump being Trump. He's fascinated with the destruction. He's talking about the director of FEMA's TV ratings. Meanwhile, you got 600,000 undocumented immigrants scared to go to places because they're afraid that people are going to report them. You've got the Texas delegation, as Spencer said, voted against Sandy in 2012. Now they're going to beg
20 members.
That's exactly right. 15% of the people in Harris County have flood insurance. Most of it's federal. And you got 160 public school districts closed and at least 30 charter schools. Meanwhile, this is what it's going to reveal. What it's going to reveal is you've got a country where local government and state government must take the lead, and the president of the United States is not a president at all. All he was doing yesterday was Trump being Trump. Let's be very clear. One third of the capacity in the United States in oil refinery has been shut down as a result, and it's still raining. Now it's moving to Louisiana. Remember when Donald Trump sent some water down during the campaign to Baton Rouge? They had to take the Trump ice labels off of the water in order to distribute it. Yeah. Kellyanne Conway had to do that. What am I saying in sum? What I'm saying in sum is that what we are seeing now is the stress test on what people are. And as you know, old folks used to say, character is what you do when everything is revealed and stress comes.
And in fact, Spencer, to Greg's point, Shelley, go to my iPad, please. You see the city of Houston has put this tweet out. We will not ask for immigration status or papers at any shelter.
Mm-hmm. Now, how are you going to deal with that?
That's what the city said.
And the city, to make it clear, they have told federal authorities, you're not going to go into any shelter deporting people who are here for shelter. Eugene, real quick.
I think it's absolutely deplorable. We've read a couple of reports that when the storm first hit, that ICE literally left immigrants 50. At bus stations that were waiting for their bus. It just left them there. Yeah, I think that's absolutely deplorable. That's inhumane.
Come on.
Well, that's what you have here. All right, folks, coming up next on News 1 Now, we will talk with Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee about the continued response there in the Houston area on our Tom Joyner Morning Show simulcast. Plus, on the show, faith leaders from around the country make it clear they're going to hold Washington accountable when it comes to racism and discrimination. All of that. Next one out.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks.
Yeah,
they want the jail up,
please. Join our simulcast with the Tom Joyner Morning Show in just a second. We're going to be talking with Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee with Tom, Sybil, and Bill Bellamy. Folks, as we said, the devastation continues there in Houston. Yes, Tom, you're there. We have Congresswoman on our end here. Congresswoman, are you there?
Yes, good morning.
All right. Hold tight 1 second. 20 seconds. We'll be back live on the Tom Joyner Morning Show. Folks, as I said, the folks right now, you have relatives in Port Arthur or Beaumont. You should be checking on them, making sure they get to safety. Water is rising tremendously in that area east of Houston in the Golden Triangle. It's being impacted as well. And so, again, we want anybody who's in those areas, check on them now. Get them to shelter. The water is rising extremely fast there in the Golden Triangle. So here we go.
Oh,
we're about to join Tom Joyner Morning Show. Yes, yes, Congresswoman is with us, guys.
Okay. Roland.
Yes, sir.
Here we go.
Hold it now.
From Washington, D.C., Roland Martin. Good morning.
Tom Joyner, good morning. Sybil and Bill Bellamy, good morning to you as well. Let's get right to it. Houston being devastated by, of course, Hurricane Harvey. Hurricane Harvey has went back to the Gulf of Mexico and has re-entered land. It is dumping massive amounts of rain on the Gulf, on the Golden Triangle there, Beaumont, Port Arthur, Lake Charles has been spared, but last night, Tom, in 6 hours, 11 inches of rain dumped on Port Arthur. One of the storm shelters there also is being flooded. Let's go right to the phone lines. Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee of Houston. Congresswoman, of course, Houston is still being impacted by flooding. We'll get 1 or 2 inches of rain today, but now with the rain moving east, moving towards Louisiana, we're going to see even more devastation.
We absolutely are, and let me first of all thank you so very much. And Roland, we know you've come from this area, and all of these are your friends and neighbors as well. Many people don't know that we are 50 feet below sea level, and we are still flooding. The Houstonians are resilient, but they need our help. I spent from early morning Sunday as I was came out in a high water vehicle from my home into the Georgia Brown Convention Center to help, and have been there ever since trying to ensure that those people are safe and sound, but also going out to try and help with rescues and as well looking at the devastation down I-10 East in the north side, northeast. And I hope those who can hear me, if you are still needing rescue, which is my number one priority, that everyone that needs to be rescued is rescued. To make sure that you put a signal outside your home, a towel, or a sheet. But help is on the way, and we're looking forward to recovery. Our job as members of the United States Congress is to get that aid package and to make sure that the president complies or keeps the promises that he made, and that is that we have full funding in an aid package to help people return to their homes, their jobs, their families, and as well children return to school.
Congresswoman, when you talk about the rescue efforts there, where do we stand for when it comes to many of the black areas of Houston. We also, as you go east, now you're talking about that rain impacting Crosby, Texas, Barrett Station, Baytown. I've got tons of relatives in those areas. Now you're talking about Port Arthur, Beaumont as well. Again, significant number of black folks who live along that corridor, that I-10 corridor.
The impact on minority communities was extensive. Some areas did not flood. But as we go east, that is a real question. We have now the full impact of 12,000 Texas National Guard. We have the full services of the Coast Guard. And we are hoping that as this storm, as it has already hit the Golden Triangle, including Beaumont, that those individuals will be immediately rescued. We know that those centers are flooding. Unfortunately, people were still in the eye of the storm. My goal is to make sure that as it goes east, all of those local officials take advantage of the federal resources. FEMA is here. We have opened up FEMA centers. I'd ask that if you get to high ground, you can use your iPhone to register and get a tracking number from FEMA. But we're going to make sure that no matter what income you are, and what racial background you are, we've got to pay attention. That was the case in Houston. A lot of the African-American neighborhoods were underwater, particularly in the Northeast. That's where we keep going back and back and back. To Lakewood yesterday, Forest Green yesterday, we were out looking for people to make sure that they were rescued. We took an ambulance up to the Forest Green area and were able to take a bedridden person out. So there's still people there, and if you still have power and you need to be rescued, please call 311, 911 at this point, 911, to be able to secure those resources. And we are paying attention to, we're paying attention to social media. Those of you who still are able to listen to the Magic 102, please, across the nation, please, if your relatives are there, let us know, and we're trying to get them out.
Tom, social media is playing a huge part in this. Yesterday, one of my cousins, of course, she lived in Kingwood, posted a message of distress on Facebook, and about 20 minutes later, a boat arrived, picking her up, taking her to safety. Again, that Sybil is showing you how Facebook, Twitter, Instagram is playing a role in alerting people who actually is in need. Sybil, go ahead.
Roland and Congresswoman, we were talking about the people who are having immediate medical needs, such as dialysis several times a week, that kind of thing. What kind of provisions, what kind of situations are people finding that are having to go into shelter situations?
Thank you. So first of all, I want to also thank all the volunteers, some of these folks that are rescuing people, volunteer people. That the dialysis issue is of concern. My office is trying to work on making sure that the dialysis teams that are needing to come in are getting helicoptered in. We're trying to make sure that we get those people into hospital settings. Right now at the George R. Brown Convention Center, we have a what we call a DMAC system that's just come down, DMAC team, excuse me, full medical team with tents that can do dialysis down here at the George R. Brown Convention Center, and so they can do dialysis right on site.
Congresswoman, obviously people are talking about relief funds. There are many out there. Of course, we have the BlackAmericaWeb.com relief fund. The mayor also has GHCF.org. And let's just be honest, Congresswoman, there are a lot of people who are not fond of sending money to the Red Cross because of past issues when it comes to disbursement, helping folks directly and immediately. Are you encouraging folks to give directly to the mayor's relief fund? That way it gets to those folks as well?
Well, absolutely. Surprisingly, Roland, let me not use that term, because I lived through Katrina and Rita, and I know the feelings about the Red Cross. They have been stand up here, and so we thank them for the work that they're doing. But we're encouraging the support of the mayor's fund to be able to get immediate dollars to individuals. We also know that FEMA is on the ground, and FEMA has the opportunity and the structure to give those current dollars to people who are in apartments or need money as we go to be able to recover. And that's why we ask everyone. I was at the FEMA Center last night, and a homeless person came up, and we said, fill out and get your tracking number. We're not turning anyone away. And at this point, the real message is to the president, that we have got to keep the voice of unity. and those dollars. I'm writing an aid package. This is going to be more than Hurricane Sandy and more than Hurricane Katrina. This is, Hurricane Katrina was devastating. This is catastrophic because it is continuing. And even though we are a little relief now, we expect 2 inches, our bayous, our rivers, they are, our lakes are still overflowing, and we're still rescuing today. 30 to 40,000 houses may be, may have been destroyed. 500,000 cars may have been destroyed. We're going to have a multi-billion dollar devastation here in this region.
Congresswoman, I don't know if you can talk about it now because we have the music, but at some point, can we talk about the September 1st deadline for the hurricane damage claims under the Texas law? September 1st is Friday, and a lot of people are saying, and we're getting mixed messages about whether this is going to happen or not.
Well, I've asked that it be waived and not be in place for at least 6 months. I'll be working with the Congressional Black Caucus. I just wanted to say thank you to all of my fellow colleagues in the Congressional Black Caucus and all of my colleagues, Republicans and Democrats alike, who have been calling. But we need to work to make sure that the state does not do that. It is impossible for that state law to go in place and people's lives to be salvaged and recovered. It is important for the state to know what reality they're dealing with.
Anton, real quick, there was a federal rollback of Obama regulations dealing with flooding as well that Trump pulled back a few days before.
Absolutely.
Hopefully the president will also reverse that decision. That shows you, again, what happens in natural disasters, why policy matters. Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Good work.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Hugging that.
All right, folks, coming up next on News One Now, we have the Monday's Minister's March for Justice on the 54th anniversary of the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. Our cameras were there, and we will give you a longer perspective on what took place on that day. Plus, talking about Texas, they still have issues when it comes to voting and illegal congressional districts. We'll talk with Christian Clark about that and how it impacts minority voters. All of that, News One Now on TV One.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
We showed you yesterday, of course, some of the march that took place on Monday, led by faith leaders. Some 3,000 folks were there, gathered at the MLK Memorial here in D.C. It was organized by the National Action Network. And here's a more in-depth piece on that march.
One thing we know, that love overcomes hate. Everybody say, love overcome hate. Say it again.
Love overcomes hate. We are marching today for repentance. Repentance means turning around voter suppression. Turning around an unjust criminal justice system. Turning around economics, education. It means turning around. We're going to march today to turn around.
And we're showing up today, and we're showing up every day, because Dr. King, when he gave the dream speech, it was in a march for jobs and a march for freedom. It's a dream about voting rights. It's a dream about criminal justice reform. Not about criminal injustice, about justice. It's about health care. It's about economic justice.
No justice. No justice. No justice. God bless you.
Democracy can no longer be under attack. There's a great moral corrosion and cancer that is eating away at the heart of our democracy, and it is white supremacy.
Our nation needs to wake up from the fact that the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s vision of I Have a Dream, as he so beautifully articulated in his speech years ago, that it still largely remains an unrealized dream. When our nation remains deeply segregated, disparities between the rich and poor are at an all-time high, and voter suppression is once again in effect.
So let me tell all the white supremacists and KKK and everybody that America is a multi-faith country. Do you all agree?
Yes. Amen.
That America is a multi-racial country. Do you all agree?
Amen.
That America is a multi-faith country. Do you all agree?
We have allowed evangelicals to distort and bastardize the Bible and to
declare erroneously an outright lie that Donald Trump is a man of God. He is not God's man, and the reason we know is because we are God's people. And so we repent on behalf of the likes of Paula White and Perry Stone and Jerry Falwell and the Board of Liberty University. They do not reflect the body of Christ at large.
I want the media to see this crowd of rabbis and priests and preachers, that we may not agree on every local issue, but we agree on a universal issue, and that is morality must be above party politics, and we're going to walk together through the streets of Washington to the Justice Department, blacks and Jews, Catholics and agnostics, because we want to send a message. You had a photo of neo-Nazis and white supremacists at the statue of a Confederate general, Robert E. Lee, in Charlottesville. Well, don't close your lens. Take your camera back out. You're going to see the victims of Nazism, the victims of white supremacy march today to the Justice Department and say, we don't care what party's in, we are not gonna be out. We're coming together like Dr. King and Abraham Heschel did, like Goodman, Cheney, and Swerner did. It's marching time. It's fight back time. It's marching time. It's fight back time.
Hey, hey, ho, ho, Trump has got to go. Hey, hey, ho, ho, Trump has got to go.
I want to show that white America is willing to stand in justice for all, and especially the clergy and the church.
Ain't gonna let racism turn me around. I'm gonna keep on walking. Keep on.
We're marching because we're taking a stand against the racism that is impacting our society, especially with our current president who's advocating racist type initiatives and his policies.
Matters because it shows that we can get religious leaders of all faiths to stand together against hate and bigotry and say no matter who's in the White House, there are moral principles that we will not allow to be removed from our society.
Two things are at stake right now: the soul of a nation and the integrity of faith. Soul of a nation and the integrity of faith. We're marching because those things are at stake.
Today I stand with my brothers and sisters, people of faith, to say that when our Justice Department closes the gates, together we will push them back open. Let me hear you say it. Open the gates.
Why have we descended upon the Department of Justice? We are here for Trayvon Martin. We are here for Michael Brown. We are here for Philando Castile. We are here to protect voting rights. We are here to let our president know we will not stand for racism. We will not stand for bigotry.
And God will hear our prayer. God will heal our land. It's healing time. It's hope time. It's healing time. It's hope time. The water is deep. The deep water does not drown you. You drown when you stop kicking. Don't stop kicking. Don't stop marching. Don't stop voting. Keep hope alive. Keep hope.
There is no equivalency between neo-Nazis and Antifas, between racists and white supremacists and those who would march against them. I'm a preacher in the gospel tradition. My Bible tells me that at the last day, the last trump will sound. I ain't waiting on him. I'm waiting on the real Trump. When that trump sounds, justice will prevail. Love will prevail.
Oh, deep in my heart, I do believe.
All right, folks, next on News One Now, Supreme Court Justice sides with Texas. State officials fighting over redrawing two of the state's congressional districts. We'll talk voting rights, voter suppression, plus the takedown of the oldest white supremacy website in the country. All of that next, News One Now, TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks, officials in Texas got an assist from Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito in temporarily blocking a court order to redraw two of the state's 36 congressional districts. On August 15th, a federal district court ruled that the state intentionally tried to weaken Hispanic voting power by preserving congressional districts held by Republican Congressman Blake Farenthold and Democratic Congressman Lloyd Doggett, both of whom are white. The court ordered state officials to draw an entirely new congressional map or provide the court with proposed remedies. In a request for an emergency stay of the order, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton argued that the state would have trouble meeting an October 1st deadline to provide voter registration certificates to election officials. Also, of course, what's happening in Illinois, they also have passed a law there allowing folks to vote on automatic voter registration. They're the 10th state in America to pass this kind of bill. And right now in North Carolina, they're still fighting over the redrawing of maps there. And so North Carolina Democracy North Carolina, they are still fighting that as well. And so we're trying to follow them on Twitter at Democracy NC to keep it up to date what's happening there. But Republicans in North Carolina are doing their best to also, let's just be honest, screw the voters and to guarantee Republicans are able to move forward when it comes to holding onto state offices as well as congressional offices. Joining us right now is Kristen Clark, President and Executive Director of Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. Kristen, when it comes to this issue, look, these are very clear efforts by Republicans to hold on to power. There was a piece I saw yesterday in the New York Times how in Wisconsin they called in every Republican, had them sign a document, non-disclosure, to allow them to see these maps that were drawn utilizing algorithms that even though in the state Republicans got 46% of the vote in the state, they were guaranteed 60% of the seats, which basically can lock out Democrats forever.
You know, there's something strange when you have mid-decade or late-decade redistricting efforts underway in states in a way that we're seeing right now. Historically, states open up their districting maps at the start of a decade when you have new census data that provides an accurate picture of the population that you're working with. So I'm deeply suspicious of this pattern that we're seeing across the country where, without basis or need, states are opening up their maps. There's a war underway when it comes to voting in our country. The development out of Illinois, where they've pushed forward automatic voter registration, is certainly something to celebrate. This now marks a moment where we have bipartisan support for automatic voter registration, and I'm encouraged by the fact that we're seeing some good things happening among the states. Texas, however, is another story. This is the belly of the beast. In the last 4 weeks, four courts now have found that state officials engaged in discrimination in the context of redistricting. They continue to resist their photo ID law, and they've now dumped more than $3.5 million of taxpayer money into standing by a discriminatory law that is rejected over and over and over again by the courts.
Spencer Overton, you're the author of the book, Stealing Democracy, The New Politics of Voter Suppression. This has been going on now, clearly for more than a decade.
Right.
But to be perfectly honest, this has been the case since the 1965 Voting Rights Act.
No, that's right. And before the Voting Rights Act, I mean, politicians were excluding black people to maintain power, right? This is about maintaining power and control in terms of the redistricting piece that Kristen talks about. Also, I think we can't discount this automatic voter registration and the importance of it. Most of the people who don't vote are not registered. Registration right. in and of itself is a significant barrier to voting. So big win in Illinois.
Gene, I don't understand. The Republicans want this to be a democracy. Why keep blocking votes from voting?
Yeah, I don't support voter suppression in any way, shape, or form. You know, I'm a proponent of, you know, get the voters registered and then both parties fight out for the value of the vote. You know, I think what's going on in North Carolina is bad. I think what's going on in Texas is bad. I think what's going on in Maryland is bad with our congressional districts.
Greg?
Well, I mean, how much of this is really just delaying something that's inevitable? All those voting rights cases that Spencer talks about, Baker versus Carr, all this stuff was a Texas battle. So when we hear, you know, what Kristen, what you all are doing, what we see is this is just a temporary thing. I mean, how much of this is going to be fought in the courts, and how much of this is about voter education, getting people who are eligible to register so that your work is even easier because people just vote?
Absolutely. Kristen, real quick, speaking of fighting, talk about real quick what the largest committee did when it came to shutting down one of the white supremacists. Websites.
Well, look, Charlottesville happened in part because white supremacists have found a haven online to help organize their members and to incite people to violence. And one of the main spaces or staging grounds for a lot of that dangerous and vicious organizing activity is Stormfront, stormfront.org. This is a site that has been up for more than two decades. They've got more than 300,000 registered members that stretch not just here in the U.S., but across the globe. And their members have been linked to deaths of African Americans, of Sikhs, of protected minority groups. And we're pleased that we shut them down. The Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law reached out to the web host that provided a platform for Stormfront. They have an acceptable use policy that prohibits users from engaging in conduct that you know, might result in harassment or discrimination, and we gave them 1,000,001 examples of how Stormfront members were using that site to incite and inspire racial violence. They've been shut down since Friday, and their members are in a tizzy because they have nowhere to go. There have been talk about Stormfront rallies, and now they've got to look somewhere else.
The work is not cheap. Let folks know how can they get to the Lawyers Committee.
They can donate to the Lawyers Committee by going to our website, www.lawyerscommittee.org. We are fighting harder than ever. The injustice and discrimination and the rollbacks that we face are great, so we can use the support now more than ever.
All right, Kristen Clark, thanks a bunch. We come back, Erica Ash, Jesse T. Usher, talk about the new season of Survivor's Remorse, News 1 Now on TV One.
Your centerpiece for black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks, season 4 of Survivor's Remorse on Stars is upon us at American Black Film Festival in June. We caught up with Erica Ash and Jesse T. Usher about the new season. So you started last season, and so...
Disclaimer!
Your Mike Epps character dies.
Yeah.
And it was a little heavy.
It was very heavy.
For basically the entire season. It picked up in like the last two or three, but...
It took a dark turn, didn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it went to dark comedy.
I was kind of like, okay, did the comedy leave? Did it? Can we get it?
Yeah, it turned to dark comedy, but I think it was our homage to him and what he meant to our family. I understand how some of the fans would be like, all right. But I think I feel like it turned around after like maybe the third episode.
I gave it the fifth.
Really?
It was a cloud that
stayed with us for a little bit.
Yes.
And then we had to find ways to bring the comedy back into that. I understand what you're saying.
Exactly what it felt like.
Right.
Yeah.
What it felt like.
Yeah.
So,
but I think that we did, and I think that was one of the biggest challenges for us, like in growing our characters and figuring out what life meant after Uncle Julius. That was, you know, it's a challenge for the writers and a challenge for us to find the funny and what material we were presented. And so, you know, I think when we found it, we found it.
And then, of course, I mean, which is a natural part of life anyway, because you experience his heartbreak, you experience things along those lines, but you still have to have, life still has to go on.
That's true. Absolutely.
All right, so this upcoming season, the promos are saying you're back on the court. Okay, we don't know what that means. That's just what they say.
The proverbial court.
The proverbial
home court, if you will.
Right.
You're not going to see me play basketball. Okay. That was a strategic decision, right?
Okay. Like absolutely.
That's a whole other can of worms you have to open.
Right.
If you have to get players, you got to get cheerleaders, you got to get, thoughts. It's a whole bunch of stuff.
You got to get thoughts.
Got to get thoughts.
What's a good playoff game without a couple thoughts?
I mean, yeah, precisely.
So we wanted to keep the focus on the family. And so if you bring in that element, it takes the focus away, and then you've got to kind of juggle two storyline, two separate sides of the storyline.
Well, right, and so really, I mean, the reality is the basketball piece has always sort of been the thing in the background. So it's kind of like, he's a player, but here's the other side of it.
Absolutely.
Your character was a little, it's always been ignorant. has always been ignorant.
This is that defiant Paldy.
No, I mean, let's just be real. I mean, whether or not it was freaking the other woman in the bathroom at the club.
We just talked about that. And she was talking about how she goes into the writer's room and, that she brings up these storylines and she talks about where she wants the character to go and how great they are at involving that into, what comes to life. And I was saying, so that one was...
That was not mine.
You sure?
That was not mine.
That seemed like an idea that you might have said.
It was not mine.
Like, I want to get some excitement into M. Chuck's life and I'm thinking about doing this
thing. They actually did bring that to me and they were like, okay, listen, we haven't gotten anything juicy from you in terms of that. So, can we get a little something? And I was like, okay, let's do it.
So, if you could say in a few words what people should expect, not giving anything away, with a new season, what is that?
You're definitely going to be able to expect resolution. You're going to be able to expect
self-discovery,
and ignorance.
Lots of ignorance.
As is the survivors.
But also a change in the power dynamic. You see that happen a lot amongst the characters. You know how they deal with each other as well as the world around them. Like it changes a lot in the fourth season.
But also your show is now grown up because when you debuted, you were paired with, I think you came on Saturdays. When you launched, and then what did they pair it with?
We were standalone,
but I remember how they marketed. Now you're pushed into August, because now people kind of like, yo, what the hell? Now we got to wait another month.
Right,
what's up for the show?
Right,
and so it feels even more like you're sort of this standalone show. I'm watching how Stars is. I'm watching how they're stacking shows. I'm watching how I see Power debuting later in June or whatever, and y'all are launching literally 2 months after them.
Yeah, basically when they're finished is when we're gonna jump in. But last season they paired us right after Power, so Power would air and then immediately after Survivor.
That's what I'm saying. So now.
Now I feel like we've earned.
I'm saying y'all grown up.
We've grown up.
We got our own thing.
Yeah, and it's a Sunday night.
Last season from the season before, and so and a lot of that is people talking about it. We haven't done so much more in terms of our publicity and press, and so it's just that the word is really spreading. We definitely got a leg up going after Power last season, so that was helpful because a lot of people just didn't know where to find us, and so then once they were able to find us, it's like, oh wait, what's this show? Then they got reeled in, and then now we have our legs underneath us,
and the social media aspect as well, being able to really go back and forth with communicating with folks.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's one of my favorite parts about being on the show is get to talk to people like during the premiere and like right after. That's one of the best parts, to see their reaction to the work that we put in, because we put in a lot of preparation, a lot of work.
So how many episodes this year?
Ten
episodes. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we're certainly looking forward to it. And again, tell Mike, I'm still expecting there to be an interview moment with your basketball playing character and an Ascot wearing journalist. I don't understand what the problem is. I don't understand why,
why is Roland Martin not on the show?
I'm just saying.
We have one mission.
I'm just saying.
We got one mission.
I'm just saying. There are very few shows I live tweet to my 1.5 million followers. I'm just saying.
Give a little.
That I put the Roro stamp on. But I'm just saying, I'm just saying, Mike, it'd be nice. You got other people extras. I'm just saying.
can you have a news conference? And I'm sitting there, I'm just saying.
Yeah. Right, right.
I mean, it ain't that hard.
It's a lot of possibilities.
Yeah. I mean, ain't that...
know what? I don't know why this just came to me, but maybe when we do our writer's pitch meeting,
I was just thinking that. They gonna,
let's pitch rolling.
At the beginning of every year, they always say, like, you know, what direction do you want the show to go in? What you thinking about the character, this and that? I'm gonna say, you know, there's something that's been missing.
See, I got a better one. See, well, y'all let me know when y'all don't have a writer's pitch meeting.
And you want to come in.
If you say, we got an idea, then boom, doors open.
You're going to walk out.
And he walks in.
Ask Scott, with two cameras and some lights.
and they still not going to know what the heck we talking about.
Oh, they going to know. They're going to be like, figure it out. Hey, y'all. This is how we ended the interview with Erica and Jesse right here. Go to my iPad, Shelly. That's how we do it right there. Back, News 1 Now, TV 1.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
I want to make a correction to a story we had yesterday, folks, in News 1 Now about the suspended professor in Arizona. His name was Dr. Toby Jennings. We, in the script, we actually said Toby Jenkins, and that was, of course, a professor at USC, a female professor who got lots of emails for that, so we want to apologize to the actual Dr. Toby Jenkins. It's that Toby Jennings that lost his damn mind. All right, y'all, today our hashtag HBCU Giving Day University is colleges, Concordia College in Selma, Alabama. To donate, go to ccal.edu/donate. Real quick, birthday singer Trevor Jackson turns 21. Rapper, is it Maino?
Maino.
I don't know, yeah. Turns 44, I ain't never heard of him. And actress Michael Michelle turns 51. Yeah, I heard of her. I'm gonna see y'all tomorrow, I got to go.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV 1.